You're in the zone with Jason Anderson.
Is this really Jason Anderson?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Chiefs win 23-20. Heading to the Super Bowl, third time in 4 years for the Chiefs. Talking now with our NFL insider from ESPN, Field Yates joins us here in the zone. Field, how are you, sir?
Jason, I'm not quite as well as Patrick Mahomes this morning, but I'm doing pretty well, my friend. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I think a lot of people around the city are doing really, really well right now, feeling good.
Well, maybe hungover, though, right?
Yep. You know what? Maybe hungover. Josh, who I do the show with, got off the air at like, what, 1:15, 1:30 last night, and then you're in here this morning.
I got home at 3. I got a power nap in.
I got a text from him, Field, last night at like 2:30 saying, all right, here are the sound bites that I cut up ready to go for the show tomorrow at 2:30 in the morning. And he's here, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed.
I feel great.
Excited, ready to go, man.
AFC Championship victory will do that to anybody. So,
that's exactly right.
What a night it was and what an evening. I mean, just that's one that no matter who you were pulling for in that game, I do think that, and maybe I'm overreacting because the NFC Championship game was such a dud, but that feels like a memorable one yesterday in Kansas City. Certainly a game that I'll remember for a long, long time.
All right, so your takeaway and reaction from that game in which was a, that was every play, every inch, everything in that second half felt like, each and every play could be the difference in the game.
Totally, and I don't want to overlook the brilliance of Patrick Mahomes, and we can certainly talk about it, but I think it's probably been given a lot of the due that it is deserved already today, but I think about the story of yesterday as maybe being the Chiefs defense, really bringing it from start to finish yesterday, and they dominated up front. And I know the Bengals were down 3 starting offensive linemen, but this was the same Bengals offensive line unit that completely neutralized the Bills just a week ago. And the Chiefs from the jump basically disrupted Joe Burrow. I know that the sack numbers, I think was it just 4 total, but
5.
All those were in the first half of 5 total. But 3 of them came in a 3 drop back sequence early in the game. So maybe the sack production was down a little bit, but I thought when the Chiefs kind of needed it the most, they got the best out of that pass rush. And beyond that, just the rookie class. I mean, a drafted rookie class that other than Darian Kennard, who obviously was active, I don't think he even played, like, you know, you're talking about really every single guy bringing it yesterday, and that's how you win in this league. I mean, obviously having Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid is really the secret sauce, and Travis Kelce, but that's when you go from great to maybe all-time great, is you find things around the margins, and you do the small things, and you acquire players on cost-controlled contracts that become major contributors. So the Chiefs defense and the Chiefs drafted rookies, I think, really deserve a big shout-out for how they performed yesterday.
Field Yates is our guest from ESPN, and this show we had talked last week, throughout the week, getting ready for this game, just about Chris Jones and feeling like this was a legacy game for Chris Jones, that he had spent the entire offseason. He even said after the game last night, Field, that his entire offseason was dedicated to that AFC Championship game loss, and kept saying he said once in the locker room and once at the podium last week, God is good. In getting a chance to play the Bengals. God is good. So knowing that redemption was there on the line for him and a legacy game, okay, you're the best interior defensive player this year, and the Chiefs are probably going to extend you and maybe $30 million a year. Go show it. And I said earlier in the show, Field, and maybe it comes off as blasphemy, but I really believe it. I think the best player that played on the field last night was Chris Jones.
Yeah, I don't think it's blasphemy. And I think it's almost like, I don't know if we need to throw this caveat out there, but I just want to make sure that we do in case people get really, really ticked off. Like, Patrick Mahomes was nothing short of incredible given the circumstances yesterday. Just simply remarkable. I mean, the guy's got a high ankle sprain and he looked close to Patrick Mahomes. I can't say enough about him. Mm-hmm. But we see 320 passing yards and 2 touchdowns from him fairly regularly. 8 pressures for Chris Jones yesterday. Obviously had 2 sacks of his own. Another one of his pressures led to a sack by a teammate, and the other 5 pressures all led to incompletions. So you're talking about, I don't know, what's that, like 15% of the Bengals' plays were wrecked of their, probably even a higher number, that probably more like 20% of their passing plays or dropbacks were wrecked by Chris Jones, basically by himself. So can't overstate just how incredible he was yesterday. And you're right, I mean, I don't know that I completely acknowledged going into this game just how personal this was for the Chiefs. And I think, you know, it was shown through the emotion on the field yesterday. But I thought the sound after the game told me that that was a team that listened to all the noise for basically a year straight, felt like it squandered an opportunity last year, and wanted to see that Cincinnati team again this year. They wanted them, and they wanted them in that stage, and they got them. And while it was a close game, and it's clear that both of these teams are going to be around for a long time in the AFC, that was a big one yesterday for Kansas City. Whether it was because they felt like they were getting the monkey off their back or what, you could just tell from the iconic Travis Kelce quotes to the Chris Jones interview, and really everybody had a soundbite that I think is worth recalling. So it felt to me like this was not your average AFC championship game.
38 pass rushing snaps. Chris Jones was double teamed on 31 of the 38 pass rush snaps.
Still did that.
Still ends up with 10 pressures, 2 sacks, 5 quarterback hits.
We added 8 pressures for ESPN, but still, you know, other sources are saying 10. Like, the bottom line is he was just a play record.
And also the, 2 or 3? Let me pull up my notes real quick. Sorry. 3 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hits, 4 overall tackles, the 2 sacks, the 8 or 10 pressures, whichever it was, whoever, you know, credit that's out there. That's call it 9, split the difference there. While 38 pass rush snaps, he was double teamed on 31 of them. I mean, that's Defensive Player of the Year game for Chris Jones, a legacy game that he needed to have that because feel like, you know, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Joe Burrow. That was the storyline going into it. But some of the side sort of peripheral, you know, storylines was about that offensive line that you talked about against the Bills. And that to me was the real advantage, right? Like, that was the real advantage the Chiefs had in that game. Of the Chiefs were second in the NFL in sacks this year behind the Eagles, going up against a banged up offensive line. If the Chiefs did not pressure Burrow, it was going to be a long day. And they did. And Chris Jones was just simply a freaking game wrecker in that. And I think he proved that he's worth the money and whatever he wants. I mean, I say the Chiefs go ahead and extend him and give him that money and have him be on this Chiefs team for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's tricky in the sense that you shouldn't want to keep Chris Jones. I only say that it's tricky because every big deal that you do at this juncture of the roster building process is a careful calculation, right? It's obviously for sure. Patrick Mahomes is making what he's making, and Travis Kelce, you know, I think the fact that they did the renegotiation, even though it was basically like a slight pay raise for this year, probably like that either suggests one of two things. One would be that he might get paid again this offseason, or two is that, like, he knows that, you know, he's kind of been paid the most he'll make in the prime of his career, and he's probably dwindling down to one last contract. So I don't think it's going to be like any sort of issue with Travis Kelce this offseason. But there are guys where the bill is going to come due. And you certainly have to make some decisions, and I think they were rewarded, the Chiefs were, for some of them. You know, certainly the Tyreek Hill trade hasn't made them that much worse for the wear, right?
Yeah.
I know that the wide receiver depth got really hairy yesterday, but still, what are you going to do there, right? Like, that's just bad luck more than anything else. But you have to make some decisions, right? Whether, you know, if you extend to Chris Jones and give him a raise right away, what does that mean for Orlando Brown Jr.? What does it mean for, you know, other guys, whether you want to retain a Juju or somebody else like that? Those are the kind of considerations the Chiefs have to make this offseason. But you know something, Jason? Here's the alternative. The alternative is you're sitting at home this morning or you're planning your golf trip because you're not playing in the Super Bowl. Yep. So these are high society problems.
No doubt. Field Yates is our guest from ESPN. Strategy versus execution. Because when the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, at the time it was they're regrouping, maybe taking a step back, short-term pain for more long-term health, keeping that Super Bowl window open. Maybe they don't go to the Super Bowl this year. Heck, maybe they don't even win the AFC West. But they're setting themselves up while the rest of the AFC is investing and spending money and saying, this is the year. We're going to push our chips to the middle of the table. We're going all in. We're catching the Chiefs while they're trading Tyreek Hill. This is the year to get them. So strategy versus execution. Good strategy if you get those things back. Execution is taking advantage of the resources you have. And the fact that last night, Trent McDuffie, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Brian Cook, Karlaftis, Pacheco, Sky Moore, those guys all had impacts on the game. So you can have the right strategy of trade Tyreek Hill, helps you out down the road with salary cap, maybe allows you to keep Chris Jones, and then you've got these extra draft picks. But if you miss on those guys then you're out Tyreek Hill and the players that you were hoping to get for him. Then you got to draft other players, Field, to fill in the spot that you missed at. And that draft class looks like it could be a difference-making, sort of franchise-changing type draft class if those guys continue to play anywhere near what they're playing like right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, it's hard to say that there. It's way too early, but it's hard to say that there is, like, there are other rookies. Like, I think the Jets probably have the rookie class that has, like, the most, like, all-pro power, right?
Agreed.
Given the fact that Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson kind of proved themselves to be close to that level already. And, like, you know, I don't think Seattle is that far behind either. There isn't, like, a clear-cut, future, obvious all-pro in this Chiefs draft class right now, but, like, there are certainly guys that could get there, right? Like, who's to say that George Karloftis couldn't be a 12-sack guy at some point during his career, as an example, right? But it's strength in numbers. And I don't like to be I told you so guy because I think that's just sort of lame. The one thing I will say is maybe because it's, you know, in my prior to my time in Kansas City, I was, you know, working with the Patriots, and it just felt like there were so many of those, maybe not quite to the degree of Tyreek Hill where it was six draft picks, but, you know, I kind of grew to understand that, like, there is a circle of life in football, and that includes really good players going out the door. And the job is to not sit there and fret about the fact that you no longer have them. The job is to find ways to replace them. And I don't think that there is any player that can move on, that could be traded away from the Chiefs, that would automatically close their window unless that player is Patrick Mahomes, right? There are going to be some that are way more difficult to account for than others. You know, Travis Kelce at some point is going to be either retired or at least become immortal. That may not be a few years, may not be until a few years from now, but, you know, the point is time catches up to all of us. But the Chiefs are going to find a way, and that's not to take away from Tyreek Hill, but that's to, I think, sort of credit the resourcefulness of this Chiefs front office. And unless I missed something, I didn't hear a single interview request for a Chiefs associate this year during the GM cycle, which kind of befuddled me at the time. Wonder how many teams are regretting that right now, because as far as I could see, some pretty darn good draft picks yesterday, and certainly Brett Veach deserves a ton of credit, and I know he would give a ton to his staff as well, because they have been lights out.
That's it just sparked something in my mind when you said that. That feels like it's kind of the theme of this Chiefs organization, and maybe there's plenty of other organizations out there, but I don't follow them as closely. But Patrick Mahomes last night becomes the quarterback with the most playoff, or the youngest player in NFL history to get 10 playoff wins, goes to his takes his team as a quarterback to the third Super Bowl, 5 AFC championship games he's played in, another fourth quarter comeback and game winning drive for him in the postseason. He does it on one ankle, and he's asked, you know, how did you do it? And he said, my teammates, the trainers, they're the ones that get the credit, you know, those guys. And as you said, you know, Brett Veach would probably credit other guys around there. Andy Reid talks about, well, it's the coaching staff and putting the game plan together. The players talking about their teammates. Maybe a lot of organizations are like that. But, you know, when you said, you know, Brett Veach would probably credit his assistants more than even himself, it just, you know, sparked in my mind that, you know, that stood out last night with Patrick Mahomes, because that buildup was all of these things you did with the ankle and, you know, having to play through it. How'd you do it? My teammates. That's how I did it.
Yeah. You know, I think you hear some of that around the league. I don't know if it ever feels as sincere as it does with Patrick Mahomes. And that's part of what makes him rare. And on the one hand, Jason, like, signing a player that's that good to a 10-year contract or a 10-year extension on top of the remaining 2 years seems like kind of an obvious home run move, right? Because, hey, he's the greatest player on earth, and, you know, by the time it gets about 2 years in, it'll end up being a bargain, not like a top-of-the-market deal. But here's, like, the tad bit of risk that you could incur is that when you pay a player that much money for that long, like, that player inherits a certain amount of power. And what if that player changes his stripes, right? Like, who he is, what he stands for. And again, I'm not saying that was my expectation for Patrick Mahomes, but that would be the risk that would be inherent to a 10-year extension, is that he's got all this power now. Does he change? Here's the answer. No, he's become more of who he was before then, right? Like, he's just become that much more of a leader and that much more of the person that everybody else follows. And he's just that much more selfless. He's making a ton of money. It's not like Patrick Mahomes is taking a 95% discount, right? But still, like, given the construct of where he stands amongst quarterbacks, if he went into the front office tomorrow and said, restructure my deal right now, he'd have a pretty good leg to stand on, right?
Yep.
Like, is he worth, he's making $45 million bucks per year now. That's less than Deshaun Watson and Kyler Murray. Like, he's probably worth a minimum $10 million more than those guys, and he hasn't. And I think his actions have consistently sort of led the way in Kansas City, and it just seems real. I think he understands just how unique and special the time he's in right now, and in a league in which I understand why players want to move on or want to go chase the next big buck. It feels like Patrick Mahomes is content just doing the right things consistently in Kansas City, and that's a huge ingredient towards a team, not just being one that makes it to the Super Bowl and wins one in 4 years or maybe two in five, but can potentially win, you know, three or four in a decade.
Yeah, he would have a pretty good leg to stand on, but he would only have one. So there would only be one pretty good leg to stand on.
Yeah. With that. He's probably tired of standing on one leg.
That's true.
Probably it's been a lot of one leg in the past week, right?
He's got a couple more weeks of rehabbing to get ready for that Super Bowl. Field Yates from ESPN is our guest. Did the refs impact the game one side, one-sided the way that there is at least a commentary and an opinion out there that this was a terribly officiated game in favor of the Chiefs and the Bengals got screwed?
I thought it was a poorly officiated game. I think these things tend to kind of go both ways over the course of a year. I don't know. Like, here's what it's like. I don't think that's the right tenor of the remarks that I want to make today. When I think the story is not just about the refs. I thought that the only one that I had a gripe with was the replay of the third down. Just because I think that what it showed was. Like, I get it. There was a ref who was trying to correct the play clock issue that was taking place. But this all-star crew was supposed to be the best of the best for the NFL. And I felt like the operation there looked like JV, very JV level, right? Like,
yeah.
Ron Torbert, the head official, had no idea what was going on. And he ultimately has to be culpable and responsible for that. But what was the net result of that? Like, three plays later, I guess it was like five plays later because of the pass interference penalty, the Chiefs are punting the ball again. So
from the exact same spot.
Yeah, same thing. So it didn't really have a major impact. I thought it was a bad day, but I think also, like, it's going to be pretty obvious and pretty common. And I think that going forward, I don't know about every game, but a lot of games we're going to have the same kind of commentary. Mm-hmm. The refs were bad, and these are some key plays. That's kind of how it works in sports.
Yeah. Last one for you real quick. We'll ask you again next week for a prediction, but early feeling on Chiefs-Eagles in the Super Bowl?
I think it's way too soon to know how these wide receivers will be, but like, if there's no Juju and potentially no Kadarius Toney, I mean, it was just such a limited crew yesterday. It's going to be hard to keep up with Philadelphia, but if you told me that Juju's available and Kadarius Toney is available, I'd feel a lot different about it. So I'm going to sort of bite my tongue on an official prediction.
All good. We'll get one next week when we've got a little bit more time to see what these injuries look like for the Chiefs. And no doubt that's those are big for this Chiefs offense. Field Yates from ESPN. Field, you're the man. Really appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much. And we will talk next week, getting ready to head down to Phoenix.
Yeah, wait, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. There's Field Yates from ESPN, NFL insider, as going to wait a little bit, which is perfectly fine. You know, I was not going to hold him to, no, you need to go on the record right now and then change next week. Now we'll get his prediction next week and see what he thinks about this. But no doubt, hearing about what the injury is to Juju and Kadarius Toney, and I'm going to guess Mecole Hardman doesn't play in a couple of weeks since, you know, it took all that to get him out there. And the first hit that he took, he then leaves the game and is done. So I'm going to assume we don't see Mecole Hardman again. But, yeah, it would be hard to keep up with the Eagles' offense, especially when you know that Eagles' pass rush is better than what you just went up against. They're going to pressure Patrick Mahomes. You're going to need guys to win their matchups in the secondary. You're going to have people that allow Mahomes to get rid of the football to open receivers. And if it's the collection of guys at the end of the game yesterday, it's going to be really tough to do that. And all the excitement and the buildup of the, hey, Mecole Hardman's active. There's going to be Mecole Hardman and Kadarius Toney out there on the field at the same time. About that, there actually is not. And in fact, neither of them would finish the game last night. And then Juju left the game, and it's like, what do they have, man? What do they have at this point to be able to move forward with? And they found a way to get it done. And that's ultimately what matters, is finding a way to get it done when it mattered the most. 913-912-4810 is the text line, 913-912-4810. You know, we started talking to him about the defense and, you know, the legacy game for Chris Jones. Can we play Justin Reed before we take a break? Justin Reed on the field with Todd Lebo after the game, because a lot of guys stepped up. We talk about the rookies, but one of the callers earlier had mentioned that, you know, well, Justin Reed's also in his first year in this defense. So you got a lot of guys first year in Spagnuolo's defense, that being Justin Reed and the rookies. So here's Justin Reed, who certainly had his nose rubbed in it the previous matchup with the Bengals, and he's on the field with Todd Lebo. Here's that conversation.
This is what you came here for, right?
This is the whole reason I came here, to be a part of this, man. This feeling is unbelievable. So excited, so happy for everyone on this team, this organization. And when we're not done yet, we got one more to go.
Hard fought, man. All the way to the end.
Tooth and nail. I mean, the last four matches. What up, what up? Last four matches come down to a field goal, man. We came out on the right side of it this time.
How about your kids, man? These rookies out here making these plays.
I'm telling you, man, like, to see the growth that they came from where we started in training camp, to see J-Watt with the pick, you know, Josh with another pick, B. Cook giving the assist to Josh. You know what I mean? This is the whole reason why we got those guys to come here, man, why we drafted them. We got them ready. Coaching staff, Spagnuolo, Coach Merritt, all did a great job just having us prepared and fired up to come play today.
And then Legarius went out early, had to shuffle around some pieces. What was that like?
It takes everybody. It takes everybody, man. I mean, Willie went down too. LJ went down. The next man came up and stepped up. That's exactly what we need in order to go win the big one that's coming up here in a couple weeks. We're going to need everybody again. So we saw those guys go down. It just added more motivation that we're doing it for them. We're doing it for them. We got their back in it. We're going to go out, get the win, give them another chance to come strap up again too.
Love it. Love it. See where they were at the beginning of the season in training camp to where they are now. Jalen Watson interception, Joshua Williams interception, Brian Cook with the assist on the interception, Trent McDuffie two-pass defensed. Brian Cook almost another assist on an interception, but he was there early. It was pass interference. I don't know. I feel like the officials are screwing the Chiefs. That felt like it was a pretty bang-bang play in real time, and a lot of times those bang-bang plays, even if you're there a little bit early, are just let go. And instead, they called that at that time. You can't call that at that time in this game. In that big of a game, you got to let the players decide it, man. That's ridiculous. Unbelievable they did that. Guys stepped up. It was great. And Justin Reed and some other guys in the locker room had even more fun on a live stream of Juan Thornhill last night. Expletive laden. Smoking cigars and smoking that Eli Apple pack last night all throughout the locker room. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. And more right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Victory Monday for the Chiefs, 23-20. Winners over the Bengals heading to Super Bowl 57.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
This is this guy has a rough luck with the mouth.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We will hear from Andy Reid. He's going to have a Zoom press conference today at some point. I don't think it'll be very long, you know, other than like, how do you feel today? Cheeseburgers, you enjoy yourself last night, huh?
The injury questions alone might take 10 minutes.
That's true, yeah. I don't really have an update for you guys. Haven't got in here yet, but, you know.
But our whole roster got hurt.
Doggone it, you know, we just played a good, doggone it, Herbie. We just played a good game, you know. Cheeseburgers and had a great night with my wife. You know, we love and life, going back to the Super Bowl. It'll be a lot about, okay, Eagles and, you know, had time to process that this took place. But you're right. Is there an update on the injuries? Is going
to
be the
I don't expect
thing.
It to be anything substantial, but just there's a lot of guys.
Dude, that's, I mean, it's part of like overcoming that. You overcome Patrick Mahomes' ankle injury. You have to overcome the mental edge that, you know, the Bengals may have in terms of beating you. You overcome the fact that you've got injuries throughout that game that just impact how you're able to continue going about it. And you have to persevere. There's no excuses. It's the AFC Championship game. Figure it out. And you had some plays that didn't go your way. You had to overcome a fumble in which the ball just slipped out of the best player in the world's, you know, hands. at an inopportune time when they've got the ball and the lead, and they're up by seven at that point, and they just had that 11-yard pass to Travis Kelce, and it was like, all right, they're driving. This is where they put the game away.
What happened to you in that moment when the ball falls out of his hands and he doesn't even have the ankle wherewithal to go get it?
My heart sank. I'm like, this is what we're gonna be talking about that tomorrow. We're gonna be talking about the game turned on the MVP dropping the football while trying to throw a quick out to MVS and just slipped out of his hands. And the luckiest man of the fumble falling to him, Sam Hubbard, recovered that one too. That apparently the Bengals are just kissed. Apparently they are charmed that happens. And the Chiefs botch a, you know, possession before halftime.
The ghost at Arrowhead weren't supposed to get to Mahomes, and one of them must have just flown down and knocked it out of his hand.
Yeah, just put some grease on that.
He's supposed to be immune to that.
Yeah.
He's a Ghostbuster.
That's exactly what everybody calls him. Showtime Ghostbuster Mahomes.
The Grim Reaper didn't have a terribly long shelf life, so as long as they win the Super Bowl this year, I'm going to go ahead and start calling him the Ghostbuster.
No, it did not. The whole ankle game, things like that, may or may not have had a long shelf life if they did not win last night.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's one of the many other things that you know, we haven't really talked about. I'm on the ground downstairs in front of the
flat
TV.
Flat on your back.
Nope. In like the downward dog position almost. No, it wasn't that. It was like in the not downward dog. It's so if you're just sitting there like on your
knees. Nope, too late. That's what
I'm
imagining.
Sorry. On your knees.
Jason's
and like,
prostrate in front of the TV.
And so like, right. I'm like, I'm sitting there on my knees, but I'm as low to the ground as you can get. And my head is on the carpet, not looking. My son is next to me watching. My wife is there as well, and we're watching it, and I'm going back and forth of like looking up, am I watching the field goal? Am I not? Am I watching the field goal? Am I not? Am I gonna look? And I'm like, okay, part of me just wants to look down and hear what they say. I'm like, but they won't know until it's called good, whereas I'll know as soon as he kicks it if that thing's gonna go through or not. So I'm about to duck my head and I'm like, okay, he's gonna call timeout so I can just watch here. Cause he's gonna call his last timeout to ice Harrison Butker. So I can watch, not a big deal, but I'll watch the practice kick.
Sure.
Or do they get it? And as soon as he kicks it, there was nobody running in, so I knew that was the live play.
Well, we don't always know that when this refereeing crew is out there. I mean,
I felt pretty confident on that. but as soon as he kicked it and that thing straightened out, went crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Picking up my son, we're celebrating, you know, I'm damn near in tears because you know, there's no more taking for granted of just, oh, it's a coronation. The Chiefs are going to go to the Super Bowl.
That's right.
They did it in 19. They did it in 20. They're going to exact revenge on the Bengals that they lost to earlier in the year. This was last year's AFC Championship. It's just ordained that they are going to be a Super Bowl team damn near every year. And so knowing what last year was like, this year was like, all of the things that went into this season, yeah, there were tears that were right there about to come out. It wasn't until later on that I watched the kick in its entirety and realized that didn't really go through the crossbar very far. It hit the bottom of the net. It hit the bottom
of the net.
I
didn't know that. Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
It hit the. Can we play? I mean, this is our second segment of this hour, right?
Yeah, okay. We're great.
Okay, very
great.
Can we play Harrison Butker in the locker room with Stephen St. John? This is about a minute 40. But I thought as soon as he hit it, when he was sort of strutting away, and Tommy Townsend jumped up and started hugging him, I thought they both knew, all right, it is good. All I watched for was that it was on target. He's not going to leave a 45-yarder short. But here's Harrison Butker in the locker room with Stephen St. John talking about the moment, the opportunity, the feeling of kicking the game-winning kick to send his team to overtime. Take that, Evan McPherson, last year. That was an easy chip shot. This was a tough one in the cold. And everything that went into that and what Butker was thinking after he kicked the ball.
I grabbed him immediately because like, he hit it.
How's it
like,
feel right now? You game-winning kick to go to the Super Bowl. It doesn't get much better than that, right?
No, it doesn't get much better than that. Definitely the biggest kick of my career, just such a blessing. You know, all glory to God that ball went through, and I tried to keep the faith and keep pushing. Obviously, it was a rough year. Had a lot of misses, but so thankful that we were able to make that kick to get us to the Super Bowl.
The conditions didn't seem great. So how far did you feel comfortable? What, like, like, where were you good from, you think, tonight, going that in that direction?
55.
Yeah.
You know, in the warm-up, 55 was about my limit. I think it was windier than what the flags look like up there. The wind was in the face, left to right, and then also when it's cold, you know, the ball's just super deflated and just doesn't travel that far.
So you mentioned some of your struggles. Now it seems like you're back in the rhythm. Like, what has gone right to get back in the groove?
Yeah, we've had a good couple of games now. That's a good question. I think I struggled a little bit at the beginning just trying to figure out how to kick now with this injury, right? Anytime you injure yourself, you have to kind of go back to square one and figure out, how do I kick now? And I think it just took me longer than I would have liked. But now I feel like I'm in a rhythm, and I'm hitting the ball well in practice, hitting the ball well in the games. And it just took a little while.
As soon as you hit it, did you know? Was there any doubt when it left your foot?
I knew it had the accuracy. I didn't know if it had the distance. You know, it felt good. I'm like, oh, that's good. And then the ball just kept floating and floating. But, yeah, it went over. So.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I knew it had the accuracy. I didn't know if it had the distance. How about Butker? The ball's in the air, and as I watch his reaction again, as he looks and sees it's going through and starts to walk away, he sort of stops a little bit and looks back. And now I know what was going through his mind of, that's got the, why is that floating? Why is that thing not driving through the air right now like it always does off my foot? And he said, what, 55 yards was probably his range going in that direction. With the, as he said, the ball's being deflated with how cold it was out there. Ideal gas
law.
Wait,
the ball's being deflated?
Ideal gas law, everybody. Turns out that Tom Brady did not have to deflate footballs for it to get to that level of deflation. Ideal gas law, but whatever. But 55 yards, the, was it Amazon Prime on Thursday night that does the would have been good from?
Yeah. I think Sunday Night Football might do that also.
I would love to know what that would have been good from. And here's why. Because if that would have been good from 55, that means you move 10 yards back. With 8 seconds left, can the Chiefs pick up 5 yards with 8 seconds? And would the penalty have been null and void as being the they gave them the win by calling the penalty on Joseph Osai? Because with 8 seconds, can you pick up 5 more yards? And then it becomes a 55-yard kick if you can pick up 5 more yards. With 8 seconds left.
And he said he felt like his range was about 55 yards.
Yep.
The Chiefs disagreed with him because on the previous offensive drive, when the Chiefs punted on 4th and 8, it was a Cincy 41. I had that written down as a 55-yard field goal attempt there if they would have gone for it. They said, we'd rather give the ball to Joe Burrow and let our defense go do this thing, which is kind of crazy and kind of worked.
Yep. By the way, let's take a time out and talk about that. We have not discussed that decision, which would be much discussed if the Bengals would have driven down the field had won 23-20.
Before you go to break, I'm going to tattle on Josh here. He's like you. Last night he had no faith in Butker. I was sitting over here going, Butker in the playoff, money.
It's weird.
Yeah, no, I have no issue being told on that one.
It's weird because
money.
It's not that I didn't have faith in him. There was actually a bigger part of me that was like, he's going to make this. But there's always that little you know, thing in the back of your mind of, oh my God, what happens if he misses? Oh
no,
I had no doubt against the Bills last year to send that game to overtime. No doubt against the Bills.
Also, yes.
No doubt against the Bengals last year. Even when Mahomes fumbled the football there and it became from a chip shot to like, now you actually got to put it through the uprights and kick it. No doubt on that one either. I had much less doubt last night after the previous 4 kicks felt like they were solid and down the middle.
That helped, and so when it came down to it, I just told Beards that I'll believe it when I see it.
And you know what? You saw it to believe it. You all see it when I believe it, and you've seen it, and you've believed it, and the Chiefs are heading to the Super Bowl, and the strategy by Andy Reid to punt on 4th down and 8 in Cincinnati territory late in the game worked out. We'll talk about that next.
You're in the zone.
Like, I didn't wake up this morning and say, you know, I hope Mecole Hardman hurts a groin today.
With Jason Anderson.
I hope Mecole Hardman hurts a groin today.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I'll take Mecole Hardman's groin. Pelvis. Spinal. Pelvis. Pelvic. All right, 913-912-4810. I do want to talk about the decision by Andy Reid to punt on 4th down and 8. But real quick, this is about 30 seconds. This was after the game was over. Juan Thornhill was live streaming, and Justin Reed is involved in this, and I believe Willie Gay is there, and they're having fun with Eli Apple and the Cincinnati Bengals. So this is bleeped out. This is raw. This is not, hey, we're in front of the media talking. This is Justin Reed, Juan Thornhill, and I think in the background, Willie Gay live streaming after the game in the locker room.
Eli Apple, I'm going to smoke one for you. Smoke one for y'all.
I'm telling you. Hey. And I did everything I said I'd do. I locked down.
There was more of that went on. Tuna in a can, mother bleepers that are going home right now. They are going home right now because of the field goal that was kicked with 8 seconds left to go in the game, leaving 3 seconds, the 45-yarder, and it worked out for the Chiefs in getting that kick and getting the ball back after punting from the Bengals' 37-yard line. That's 4th and 8 at the 37-yard line. Tommy Townsend comes out, puts it at the Bengals' 6-yard line with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left when the Bengals took over. Chiefs had 2 timeouts. What did you think of the decision to punt at that time?
I kind of thought that the first offensive drive, when they ended up taking a field goal, I kind of thought they should go for that. They had the fourth down they were lining up to go for. They had 4th and 6. The Bengals had 4th and 6 there, which they converted that pass to Jamar Chase in double coverage.
Yeah.
There were several times when fourth down decisions were very much on my mind, and this was like ranked as a deeply cowardly punt. You will not find any tweets from me in that moment, because Patrick Mahomes was not looking quite right, and none of his pass catchers were out there. That is a rare fourth down scenario where the math points in one direction, and then I do not envy Andy Reid's choice there, because it really is just about the result. And so in almost every circumstance throughout Andy Reid's tenure, at least with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, I would say I would rather have Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and ideally a couple healthy wide receivers be on the field to pick up 8 yards to take this game rather than give the ball to Joe Burrow and let the defense do it. But I'm going to just say this sentence out loud and just see how it feels. The defense was the better unit yesterday. Oh, I said it. I said it and I meant it and it's true.
Well, here's the thing.
So I could make a for or against argument probably pretty easily, but I at least understood where Andy Reid was coming from.
So here's the thing. I'm quite annoyed now.
Oh, was that your take?
Because I really did expect us to disagree and argue about this. I really did think that we would be. When it happened at the time, I noted, I'm punting here.
Jason, I thought it was a stupid decision. Yeah.
When they sent out Tommy Townsend, I put in my notes. Let me pull up my notes just for. So they punted at that point. McKinnon, for your catch, Penning, Creed, Humphrey declined. Tommy Townsend coming out. I actually agree with this decision. Oddly enough, it's going to get roasted if they lose.
Yep.
But I'm not going to second guess with a result-oriented opinion. I think they should punt here. Just to write it down, to go on the record of what I was thinking at the time. And you pointed out the reasons why I would have done the same thing. It felt like those last couple of drives for the Chiefs was really pulling teeth just to move the ball.
Yeah.
It wasn't a... Well, they haven't even faced a third down. And then they had a third down and one, and the third down and one got called back because of a hold that they picked up 10 yards, and so now it's 3rd and 11. And 3rd and 11, you know, somebody catches the ball, but it's only a 3-yard gain, and it's 4th and 8, and you're like, you've been doing whatever you want here. 4th and 8, you know, you should be able to go for it. And the defense was winning the game for them. The defense was... getting off the field. And at that point, I think that, and especially the most recent possession when they did have the interception to T. Higgins, I'm like, I'm punting it here, because if you don't pick up the first down, which I didn't have faith in them doing, by the way, and that's the thing, I didn't have faith. I think the Bengals would have liked them to stay out there and go for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those do the opposite of what you think the other team wants you to do. Because if you don't get it there, the Bengals need 30 yards. You punt it deep, and they need 66 yards to pick up the to kick even that being like a 50-yard field goal. And it worked out because he relied on his defense and he played the numbers with what in the game was actually happening.